Hello, John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn this week on the Ideas Network. Well, it seems like we're in the era of the endless presidential campaign, but today marks what is commonly referred to as the official start of the 2016 race for the White House. Iowans are gathering today to show their support for their favorite Republican or Democrat in one of the most widely anticipated and most often misunderstood political events in all of presidential politics. Today on All Things Political, it's the Iowa caucus and the 2016 campaign in general. My guest is Stefan Schmidt, professor of political science at Iowa State University, also known as Dr. Politics. Professor Schmidt is quite possibly the most widely quoted expert on the Iowa caucus. Stefan Schmidt, welcome back to the Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, John. It's a pleasure.
All right. Is this something of a relief to actually get to caucus day? I mean, are Iowans going to be glad to have this behind them?
We're going to have to see psychiatrists because we're going to go into withdrawal, but I guess so. You know, we've worked really hard to meet media expectations, which have been the largest since 1970 when I came to Iowa State, and have been almost unbelievable. I mean, I can't stop. I'm looking at my email right now. I've got to do a whole bunch more. And, of course, I'm going to do analysis all of tonight in Des Moines. So I think we love it, but it has to end. And I guess, you know, that's just the way this process works.
What do you think is the most commonly held misconception about the Iowa caucus?
That it's really, really hard to participate in caucuses. That's a total myth. I spend almost all of my time smacking it down, trying to tell, you know, Chris Cuomo and others to just shut up and stop saying that because it discourages people, and it's not difficult. I mean, it's exactly at 7 o'clock. You have to get there a little early. You can look up where your precinct is and what school or whatever, and it's usually pretty close to where you live. And you go, and the rules are pretty clear. You participate, and then you go home. I mean, how hard is that? You have to find your polling place when you vote in a regular election, and you have to drive there, and you have to go in and fill out a little paperwork, and then you have to vote and pull some levers. That's more complicated, I think, than going into a caucus. It's just absolutely ridiculous to make so much of the fact that this is, you know, requires a, you know, rocket science.
And the process itself, as you say, simple. It's important to note this isn't something that's run by state government, is it? This is run by the parties. This is kind of a private deal.
Yeah, you know, the parties in the United States, as you know, and as your listeners, because they're smart people, know, were not provided for in the Constitution. George Washington didn't like the spirit of partisanship. Government does not manage party activities as it shouldn't, because in countries where it does, the government then tries to suppress things and undermine democracy. And so these are party-run events, and it therefore requires the parties to be professional and effective and efficient in how they manage these things. You don't have any voting machines where you go in and pull little levers or stuff like that. It's done in the Democratic Party differently from the Republican, but it's, you know, more, let's call it a little more casual.
You've actually put together an online course that people can take that'll give them everything they need to know about the caucus.
Iowa Presidential Caucuses, MOOC, M-O-O-C. We're in the last days of it, but people can still go there, Google it, and go in and just poke around. And it's been absolutely fabulous and interesting, and I have had so much fun. We've had over 3,000 people, I think, participating. I just found out that I was on Fox with Neil Cavuto because his basically his programmer had enrolled in the class and liked it so much that he said, Neil, we should have Schmidt on. So, you know, the repercussions of it have been enormous. And I think people have learned a lot about the history and the media role and so on in the caucuses by going in there. We have some digital video and a great discussion forum, too, that I can't even keep up with.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Iowa caucus and the New Hampshire primary, which is next in line, have come under some criticism for the seemingly disproportionate influence some people say they have on the nomination process. How do you see that?
I think Al Madrigal, who did the infamous little short bit with me on the Daily Show, where he trashed the Iowa caucuses and made every kind of comment that was derogatory about white people and small population and rural and butter cows and so on. I think I finally convinced him that Iowa Democrats and Republicans are not all that different from Democrats and Republicans in other states. And he asked the other guy that was on the show, well, where should it start? And the guy said New York, and Al Madrigal said no. I mean, he actually said too Jewy. And then the guy said, well, how about Alabama? And Al Madrigal said not Jewy enough. And then New Mexico, and Al used some obscenity. There is no place in the country, really, where, you get the perfect balance of everything. And the truth of the matter is that we don't think that anyone other than the people who have competed and won or lost and gotten the nomination would emerge if you started it anywhere else in the country, because these are the people that want to be president. These are the people that have the audacity to say, I can be a president and I'm going to go out and raise money and so on. And if it started, in Wisconsin or in, anywhere else, it would be the same people. And the Democrats in Iowa are just like the Democrats somewhere else. They are very, very progressive on the one side and very establishment on the other. Bernie Sanders, obviously, and Barack Obama have been supported by the very, very progressive Iowa Democrats. And as I said, Barack Obama, won in Iowa, and if he hadn't won in Iowa with votes from a bunch of white people, it's very likely that he would not have done very well in other places where he would have been cornered as a minority candidate, whereas Democrats in Iowa didn't do that. They said, this is not a minority candidate. This is a very interesting and intelligent person, and we like him, and we think that we want to support him. And I think, that's good. Now, the evangelical vote in the Republican Party is a little larger as a percentage, but not larger than it is in all these other states in the Midwest, the Bible Belt, and in the South. That's evangelical country as well. So I'm pretty much of a, someone who thinks that the Iowans try to do the best they can, and Iowans do not pick the president of the United States. They simply say, well, these three people look pretty good, and no one has gotten the nomination of either party since 1972 when this started who didn't come in first, second, or third in Iowa. There are a couple of exceptions, but they are irrelevant because Tom Harkin, our senator, ran 1 year, and of course, nobody else came because he was the favorite son.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to do something here that I forgot to do at the top of the show, which is to give the phone number because it's different than the one that listeners are used to for the Kathleen Dunn program. Here's the number for this week, in fact, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email still the same, talk@WPR.org. You can also reach out on Facebook. Look for the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page and leave your question or comment there, and we'll talk about it on the radio. So, Stephan, you've covered the Iowa caucuses for years. What stands out for you about this particular caucus?
Well, there are several things, of course, that we all have been talking about, and that is that you have these outsiders who are running and are, in the case of Donald Trump, are leading the field in the Republican Party, which is amazing. Carly Fiorina was thought to do well, but has fallen, and Dr. Carson was doing well, but has declined, so maybe outsiders, not all outsiders, can do that well. So that was unusual. Number two, he's not only an outsider, but Donald Trump is someone that I've never seen anyone with his particular background, his persona, his, audacity or his lack of tact, run and beat all the odds, violate every rule of politics that campaign consultants give their candidates. So that's been unusual. and having a democratic socialist running, not as a socialist party candidate or some marginal third party candidate, but as a Democrat, and coming close to beating and probably beating Hillary Clinton, certainly in New Hampshire and maybe even in Iowa on caucus night, and Hillary Clinton being the most respected and famous woman in the world a while back and having 70% approval, is beyond shocking and astonishing. And we're all digging deep to find out, how that happened. So that's interesting. And then finally, the fact that the Republicans cannot seem to winnow the field and flush out candidates and therefore spread all over the place, which gives Donald Trump a clear run at that front status. And there is no establishment candidate yet that has consolidated, so that's also interesting.
Well, I mean, you mentioned outsiders, but that's certainly, there have been a lot of outsiders who've done pretty well in the Iowa caucuses, going back to the very beginning, haven't there? I mean, Senator McGovern certainly wasn't the establishment Democrat.
That's a good point, and I think that we've forgotten some of the history, and we've certainly in the Republican Party, we've had people who are not necessarily mainstream politicians and politicians. But it's certainly a year in which the intensity of the media coverage of it has put a kind of an enormous magnifying glass on that picture, and. Both parties have outsiders, in a sense, running, and that's a little bit unusual.
And, of course, elections and caucuses and things like that are won by whoever gets the most of their people to the place where people decide. What's your perception about the ground game of the various campaigns? Who seems to have done the best job of organizing, from your perspective?
Well, Hillary Clinton has been doing a lot along those lines, spending a lot of money and time and effort, has a lot of crew here, as they say, and should have at least, someone strongly supporting her in every one of the almost 1,700 precincts. Ted Cruz rented an entire block of former dormitories from a defunct college in Des Moines and then shipped in 500 volunteers from Texas to spread out throughout the state and work, doing door-to-door, training precinct captains for Ted Cruz. So those two have done, I think, an amazing, amazing job.
We're talking about the Iowa caucus on today's edition of All Things Political on the Kathleen Dunn Show. John Munson in for Kathleen. What do you think, particularly if you're listening to this program in Iowa? Do you plan to attend one of the caucuses tonight? Do you and who are you supporting? Let us know. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Look for the Kathleen Dunn Show on Facebook and let us know what you think there. My guest, Stephen Schmidt, is Dr. Politics in Iowa. We're getting the inside scoop on the Iowa caucus today. If you have a question about the caucus, how it works, we have the expert here who can explain that for us this afternoon. Again, 800-642-1234. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with more of All Things Political on the Kathleen Dunn Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. And today being Monday, this being the 1 o'clock hour, it's All Things Political. And, of course, today is the more or less the official kickoff of the 2016 presidential race with the Iowa caucus taking place tonight. And we have an expert with us to kind of help us sort out what's what in the Iowa caucus, and maybe handicap the race a little bit and answer your questions at 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org, or via the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. Stephen Schmidt is professor of political science at Iowa State University. He's also known as Dr. Politics and is quite possibly the most widely quoted expert on the Iowa caucus. Professor, we briefly mentioned Ted Cruz before the break. He's faced a little bit of controversy over a last-minute mailing to Iowa voters that has some people up in arms. What exactly is the situation? What did he send out, and why was it controversial?
Well, there was a little mailing that had a kind of a warning at the top that you're in violation of voting, and then it listed a bunch of names of people. Apparently, these are mostly people that sort of are pledged to support him, that said, make sure that you vote because this is public and your friends and neighbors will know if you didn't vote and so on. And the Secretary of State of Iowa has been furious because he said, you know, we don't have any voting violations for not voting in the caucuses. There has been quite a bit of sort of buzz about how this is a kind of a Nixonian dirty trick type thing to try to force people to go and vote for him. Frankly, as with everything else, you know, we aren't sure how that'll affect Cruz supporters, because they may just then say, as he has, that it's just his opponents who are trying to make hay out of this, and that there's actually nothing here, and go away, and I'm not apologizing. I mean, this is the year of people doing outrageous things and not apologizing, isn't it?
Yeah, evidently. That's, you know, if you get caught with your hand in the cookie jar, the answer is, so what?
That's right. I love cookies. Shut up.
Yeah, you know, yeah, it does seem, this is, I think if we were going to name this year, this would be the year of the counterintuitive.
yeah, it is. It is.
As opposed to the year of the wounded snail or something like that. Let's take some calls. After all, this is supposed to be a call-in talk show. Let's start in West Allis, and Tom is with us this afternoon. Tom, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you for taking my call here. I am just very curious about the whole setup in Iowa, and I'm very confused. And I know I'm not the only one, because what I've been reading is that in addition to the 1,600 and some odd precincts in Iowa, there are 99 counties in Iowa. And after the caucuses are over, then I guess the delegates are selected to go to the 99 county conventions, and then from the county conventions they select delegates to go to the state convention, and from there I think they send the delegates on to the national convention, if I understand it correctly. I mean, it seems so convoluted to me. Can you shed some light on it?
Yes, I'd be happy to do that, and that's more or less the way it goes. You go from the caucuses, then you go to the 99 county conventions where delegates are selected. Then you actually go to the district. We have four House members, and they have a convention in each of the House districts, and some more are elected there, and then it goes on to the state convention where the final batch of them is selected. The reason for it actually goes all the way back to George McGovern and the McGovern-Fraser reforms that came out of the Democratic National Convention in 1968 in Chicago, which is why we have the caucuses in the first place, because it was to open up the Democratic Party to more people, women and minorities and others who are not the party bosses. And the party bosses used to simply, you know, pick the candidates more or less at the state convention and then obviously at the national convention. And the Democrats decided we need a process that lets people participate at all kinds of different levels, and that will give people a chance at each level to become involved. And so if so in a way it is grassroots democracy, and it is not that complicated. It is participatory. I always tell people, don't you love the New England town meetings? I'm a resident of New Hampshire. I have cabins up there. I spend most of the summer in New Hampshire. And the town hall, I've been to town hall meetings, obviously, because we make decisions by having people come to town halls and actually discuss and then vote. And I think it might not work very well in large states, you know, with big populations. But here in Iowa, we're a state with a relatively small population, and people actually love to participate in these things. And so, it's a party event. If you're not a member of the Democratic Party, you may not understand it, but it doesn't matter, because it's a party event, and you know, if you belong to a golf club and you don't like, you know, the way the golf club is maintaining the greens, well, you know, if you're not a member of the club, you don't have much to say on how those greens are maintained. And so, you know, it is not a government event. It is not part of constitutional rights for people. It is the Democratic Party having decided that they needed to essentially undermine the party bosses and give ordinary people more of a chance. And I think that's why it's structured that way.
Tom, thanks so much for that call. Steve in Danbury will be next. And this is a great question. Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, there's a snowstorm bearing down on Iowa. I just checked the radar. It's already just trickling into the southwest quarter of the state. By 7 o'clock, at least the southwest quarter of Iowa will be in a wet, greasy snow situation. Any talk about how that might affect turnout?
Yeah, I mean, you sound like a Midwest guy to me, and you get snowstorms, and you know that we know that we don't live, you know, in nice sunny Arizona, and so we prepare for them, right? We have galoshes, we've got, you know, the shovel in the back of our car or pickup truck, and we're careful, and I think we can handle it. You know, the storm is not supposed to really get very severe. I just checked the weather forecast because I've got to go to Des Moines, and I'm actually spending the night there, and I'm doing a lot of media tomorrow morning. We will deal with it. It may hurt some candidates, and that's certainly true because we don't know, for example, if older folks who are, for example, supporting Hillary Clinton more than Bernie Sanders are going to be worried about slipping and falling and going out in this weather. And that could affect the outcome of the Democratic results there. But I think we are sort of looking at the fact that maybe most of the caucuses, which start at 7 o'clock right at on the dot, will end before too much of that snow comes in. And people will have a chance to go home, and it'll be over with. So your comment is very interesting, but in Iowa, we always pretend that we're pretty hardy folk, and that we don't let things like that scare us off too much.
Yeah,
I live on a farm, so, you know, believe me, I know about snowstorms and blizzards and drifts and snowdrifts and 50-mile-an-hour winds. We don't like it that much, but we figure out how to, you know, maneuver around it.
I live next to Lake Superior, so talk to me about storms.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Steve, thanks for that question. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number that should be good pretty much anywhere, although I'm informed that it does not work in Australia. You can also find the Kathleen Dunn Show on Facebook and leave your comment or question there, and that is worldwide. Let's talk about some of the other candidates for just a moment and then go back to the phones a little bit. We haven't talked about everybody. Obviously, on the Republican side, it's a pretty crowded field. What about Marco Rubio? Is he connecting with Iowans?
Yes, he is. As you know, the establishment of the Republican Party went into anaphylactic shock and panic when they realized that Donald Trump was not a summer fling, that he was hanging in there, that his poll numbers were very big and getting bigger, and not just in Iowa and New Hampshire where they're huge. I lived in New York City, too, so I say huge when I say huge. But also in Florida, California, and all the other places. And so they don't like Ted Cruz much because Ted Cruz has been essentially really rude and difficult for the party leadership, as we know. And Trump is right. You know, I mean, if you're a senator, you'd think that some of your colleagues in the Senate would endorse you for president, but, you know, they don't like Cruz very much, and the establishment doesn't like Cruz or Trump, and so they've been trying to find someone. Jeb Bush was supposed to be essentially, you know, the mainstream Republican contender, had a lot of money, got a lot of support from all kinds of important people, and basically, you know, his engine isn't running very well. And so now I think Ted Cruz, he was just in Ames, by the way, yesterday and gave a fabulous speech. He is a great speaker. He looks much better when you're in a room with him. He looks more, just energetic and young and so on, and his he delivers very well. And so he's moving up in the polls. And I think the Republicans are hoping that some of the others that they, you know, would like to see maybe come up, including Chris Christie, Jeb Bush, Kasich, maybe even Carly Fiorina, would do well in their nod. And I think now more and more of them are pointing at Ted Cruz and saying, you know, maybe he can do it, and these others are going to have to be eliminated. They're going to have to basically get out. If this was, I grew up in Colombia, South America, and if this was Colombia, the others would have been eliminated already, not by the polls and the voters, but they would have disappeared. The Americans are very polite in their politics. Thank God we don't shoot each other during political campaigns. But a lot of Republicans are extremely, extremely upset that this thing is going the direction it is, and they don't see a way to stop, basically, Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nobody's figured that one out yet. We'll have to see if all of the media attention he gets actually translates into people showing up at the the caucus sites. Let's take another phone call. We'll go to Richland Center, and David is on the phone there. Let's hear from David next. Good afternoon, David.
Thank you so very much. Thanks for your guest. You did briefly talk about the Republicans recently. The evangelical vote, the question, why would Trump be popular with them? I think a lot of it goes to the fact that, and I don't mean this in any negative way, but the evangelical community posits a strong father figure in their religion. And generally speaking, there's a sheep versus the goat. Some people are going to hell in the evangelical community. They're not talked about a lot. So it should not be a surprise that there's a lot of evangelicals who look to Trump as a strong father figure who's going to kind of separate the good people from the people who didn't quite cut the mustard. But with respect to my question I called on, Bernie Sanders, I used to be in Iowa and attended several caucuses, ran for office in Iowa. My sources tell me that if O'Malley does not receive 15% in an individual caucus, that he gets 10% or 12 in the first go-round, that pretty much almost all of those people will then go to Sanders, and then that's the final result that will be reported to the media. So it could be that it could be 45-45-10, but then Sanders picks up the O'Malley folks. I'm wondering what your expert might think about that.
I don't need to answer it because you nailed it right on the head. You got it exactly right. We are pretty sure from polling. We do polling in my political science department. We have focus groups. I have a fabulous focus group that I use. And we are actually pretty sure that the O'Malley people will go. They don't have any other place to go. You know, they're not going to go undecided because what is that? You know, that's hopeless. And so we think that they will go with Bernie Sanders. That could certainly be, very beneficial for Bernie Sanders.
So let's say that Bernie pulls this off, and there's some speculation that he will. I think the most recent poll gives Hillary a slight edge. But let's say he pulls this off. He's expected to win in New Hampshire. What does that do to the Clinton campaign?
Nothing much. I mean, remember Obama and Clinton? Obama won in Iowa but lost in New Hampshire. What did that do to the Obama campaign? Not much, because Obama had plenty of money, huge energy, and he decided, I'm not going to let these first events, you know, derail me. And so I'm going to go long. And I think you're going to see, the Sanders campaign essentially do the same. I mean, you know, they're going to go long. They've been working in other states. I think they're pretty well organized. They have a very enthusiastic base of people they're appealing to people besides liberal Democrats. I mean, it's unbelievable. They are appealing to Donald Trump supporters. They are appealing to people who want to shake up the system, who want something different. And I think he can go and go and go and pick up delegates in a proportional delegate selection process. Your listeners probably wouldn't be too interested in going into detail on that because it's another one of those arcane things. But
well, it is public radio, so we do arcane pretty well.
Hey, there you go. You got me on that one. But I think they know what it is. They know that one of the things with the McGovern reforms was that you shouldn't have one person just run with the delegates and get the nomination. And so in many places you can get proportional. So if Hillary Clinton gets the most votes, the second place person also gets delegates. And if you persist and you go to every place like Obama did, that's how Obama got the nomination. I mean, Hillary Clinton, after she lost in Iowa, said, well, okay, I'll win in New Hampshire. And then she said, okay, now I'm going to take off and I'm going to go and win in other places and go. And she won New York and California, huge numbers of delegates, enormous. And she thought, well, this is over. And Obama said, no, it's not really over because there are lots and lots of places where we don't campaign and Democrats there would love to see a candidate. And you can go to South Dakota. South Dakota has no elected Democrats. Isn't that amazing? And right now it doesn't. It had at one time. But there are lots of Democrats there. I was surprised. The Democratic Party is pretty big. So you go to South Dakota, and those people really want to vote and participate and pick delegates. And maybe if Bernie Sanders goes, they'll say, well, you know, Hillary is blowing us off, and we're going to go. So both candidates are going to have to make a big effort to chase those delegates, and I think Sanders continue. We don't know the outcome, obviously. I mean, if I knew the outcome, I would be, retired and living in Monte Carlo or somewhere. but right now, well, I say Monte Carlo, because that's, sort of a wealthy,
exotic,
corrupt place.
Yeah.
But the thing is, big yacht and casinos and stuff. I'm pretty sure that he will go. I know his campaign people pretty well. By the way, I don't have a dog in this hunt at all. I never support anyone. I actually don't go to the caucuses. And the reason I don't go to the caucuses is because I do so much media. I'm a professor. I don't want to show my hand to my students. I want to stay completely neutral. And so what I'm saying is not slanted one way or another. I do know Bernie Sanders and some of his people from very early on when they first started this. And they're very smart people. They're very organized. And what he has, we haven't talked about this. Someone needs to do more on this. He has an army of thousands and thousands of young people who are volunteering to do social media and do all kinds of apps and gear and all kinds of stuff for nothing because they love the guy so much. That can go a long way, and they'll stick with him.
Hmm. Let's get in one more call before we have to go to a break here. We'll go to Madison. Betty is with us from Madison this afternoon. Hi, Betty. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm fine. Thank you. Great program. I wanted to comment that in the early 1990s, Wisconsin had a caucus system. I don't know that you knew that, but I participated. It was extremely exciting. And one of the things that was most exciting was the non-traditional candidate that is the one that the Democratic Party didn't want, Jesse Jackson, in our polling place, which was the Capitol, and we had a lot of votes, won. And it was a shock. Everybody was so surprised. And that was the last we ever heard of using the caucus system. And I wondered, why? Why, when it was such an exciting event and so many people participated, and the only thing I could think of was, from the Democratic Party's perspective, the wrong guy won?
Well exciting is probably not something the establishment likes, would it? Is it, Professor? They like boring and predictable.
Well, that is very, very interesting, and I think your comment may be very, very accurate, both of your comments, actually, that the establishment does tend to get nervous, when waves are made. And I don't know if now, in 2016, the establishment has as much power. I can tell you, and we should probably remind all your listeners of this, that the establishment still, behind the scenes, very quietly, without publicity can influence the outcome of the nomination later because they have super delegates. Let's say in the Democratic Party, there are elected officials, governors, senators, House members, and other elected officials who automatically become delegates to the national convention of the party. They go as state delegates from the state, and they can make a big difference because there are a lot of them. The McGovern-Frazier reforms created, I think, something like 700 superdelegates, which is what they're called, and we have counted them, and we are pretty sure that almost an overwhelming majority, anyway, of them are backing Hillary Clinton. So Hillary Clinton starts with a tank at least half full of gasoline with superdelegates, and Bernie Sanders has to earn some of them, but a lot of them have decided that Hillary Clinton is the one who can get the nomination, but also who can win the general election, at least at the time when they were committing. So that's another thing that, you know, sort of reflects what you were talking about, the establishment of the party, being a little bit risk adverse and try to do risk management when things get too exciting.
Betty, thanks for the call. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we'll have more with Stefan Schmidt, professor of political science at Iowa State University and the most quoted political scientist in the Iowa caucuses. He's known as Dr. Politics in Iowa. We'll be back with the doctor and with more of your calls and comments in just a moment. I'm John Munson, and for Kathleen Dunn, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, it's All Things Political. My guest is a Stefan Schmidt, professor of political science at Iowa State University. He's also known in Iowa as Dr. Politics. We're talking about the Iowa caucus, which takes place today and sort of officially kicks off the 2016 campaign season, although it's kind of hard to pick a point where the campaign actually begins because it seems like the last one never really ended. 800-642-1234, the number to call. Lines are full right now, but a line will open up soon. Let's go to New Albany, Iowa, where George is on the phone. George, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the show. I am a Iowa Democrat. And you've already touched on the superdelegates. Iowa state Democrats and nationally have a lot of influence. And I wondered, right at the caucus level, how the number of delegates that are assigned to each precinct is determined.
Professor?
Well, it's proportional. They're small precincts. I live in a tiny rural area, and our precinct is extremely small, and so, you know, there aren't very many delegates coming out of that one. And they're actually allocated by a mathematical formula that the party uses, and then the same is true. I mean, not that many delegates come out of the caucuses to begin with. The delegates, there are delegates that come on caucus night, but very few. Then there are delegates, as we talked earlier, that come from the 99 county conventions and then from the district conventions and the state convention. And it's all done basically based on population. And I think it's also based in part on whether they're elected officials or not at these levels. But I think the Democrats generally consider the process to be fair and not rigged in some way to benefit a particular candidate, but instead it's there to allocate delegates, you know, based on essentially population, I guess.
And thanks, George, for that call. Let's go to Milwaukee next. Tom is with us from Milwaukee this afternoon. Tom, hello.
Hello, and good afternoon, and thanks for the program. My understanding is that the primary purpose of the caucuses is to start it's the first step in the delegate selection process that goes on for literally for months. In fact, I think it runs until May. So how is a meaningful result determined, like by tomorrow? How do we get short-term input from this process? Go ahead.
Oh, that's a really great question, and we should have probably addressed it a lot earlier. The caucus night is not about delegates. The caucus night is much more about revealing what Democratic and Republican activists, people who go to things like caucuses or primaries in other states think about the candidates who are running. It is, to some extent, much more a straw poll. It is much more a kind of an expression of, you know, who these people think could get the nomination and then win the general election in November. And it sends out that message to voters in New Hampshire and the rest of the country. And if those people decide that the Iowa voters in both parties or either party were wrong, believe me, they'll make a different decision. But, as I said, Iowa Democrats and Republicans have gotten it at least right in terms of the first, second, or third choice coming out on caucus night, because nobody has gotten the nomination of either party who came in fourth. And I know people will immediately say, well, you know, but John McCain, you know, he came in fourth. He actually tied for third place, so I consider him to have upheld the rule. And McCain came in third without ever campaigning in Iowa. He never campaigned, but Republicans going to the caucuses said, well, we don't care if McCain campaigned here or not. He's got the characteristics that we think we want in a candidate, and so we're going to support him. And, of course, they turned out to be right. And so that's what happens. You should not ever think that caucus night is a prediction of the delegates. Whoever comes in first in Iowa, you know, is then going to go on, because that's not the case. It's just an expression of confidence on the part of party activists.
Tom, thanks for that great question. We mentioned Martin O'Malley in the context of his voters, his supporters may go over to Sanders. There's some question as to why he's even still in the race. Does he have any hope at all for a showing in Iowa that would cause him to stay in?
I don't think so. I honestly don't. I think he doesn't. And the reason is not that he's not a great guy, you know, and all this. I mean, he's certainly a talented person, been governor, been mayor, and all this. The reason is that Democrats have two great candidates that they like. They've got an establishment candidate, and on top of that, the bonus is that it's a woman, and they very, very much, many of them would like a woman president, and the Democrats, or even Republicans, and I've met some independents who say, you know, whatever, I would love to have Hillary Clinton get in there because it would be so wonderful to have the first woman in the White House. And they have a progressive who is really very, you know, remarkably connected to a part of the Republican Party that is quite huge, but feels that it has been overlooked and neglected, and they would like someone in there who can implement some of the policies that they support. And so O'Malley doesn't have a constituency when those two essentially are eating up the ideological constituencies. I think sometimes these things are about personalities, but in this case, they're about personalities and substance. And O'Malley doesn't fit either.
800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. A couple of open lines for you right now if you want to try and get in a call before the top of the hour. It's All Things Political here on the Kathleen Dunn Show. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Stephen Schmidt is my guest. He's Dr. Politics in Iowa, and we focused our attention this hour on the Iowa caucus, which takes place today, 7 o'clock tonight. People will be gathering all over the state of Iowa and letting their preferences be known within their political parties. And so we've been talking about that this hour. 800-642-1234. I guess by tomorrow everybody's going to be spinning this one way or another, no matter how they fared. And there's always the, you know, the specter of, well, if I won, did I win by enough? And so, for example, let's say Hillary Clinton wins in Iowa, but it's by the skin of her teeth. You know that the one of the stories out there is going to be, well, you know, this campaign is in trouble because she should have won by a lot more. Does Donald Trump have any danger of that happening to him? It doesn't seem like anything bothers him.
No, I you know, generally, I think it's all subsumed in the hysteria about who came in first. And it's only people like you and I and your listeners who are political junkies and truly interested in drilling deeper who will then make those comments. Whoever comes in first in the caucuses in either party will have a really big celebration. They'll be ready to go on their plane to New Hampshire and say, I won. And that'll be the only story. That'll be the headline. They're probably on page 16, assuming your newspaper still has a page 16. Ours doesn't. You know, they've shrunk down to so little. It'll say something about, yeah, but, you know, the numbers were not there and so on. Doesn't matter. And the reason it doesn't really matter is because Iowa will have done its job and there is no need, unless the electronic reporting system crashes and no one knows who came in first because Microsoft didn't train people properly or the parties didn't train them. That could be very interesting. I told Neil Cavuto when I was on his show, we talked about this new reporting system, and I said, well, you know, does your computer ever crash or freeze up or your smartphone? And he said, yes. And I said, well, if it freezes up, Neil, I said, you're going to be here longer than just Monday night at midnight. You're going to be here Tuesday and Wednesday or maybe longer. And he moaned. But certainly we hope that doesn't happen. But if it doesn't happen, Iowa has done its job. Now it's New Hampshire. Now, and you're talking about Donald Trump. You mentioned him. If he doesn't do great in Iowa, if he comes in second in Iowa, you know, so what? He will do very well in New Hampshire, where he's enormously ahead in the polls, and then he'll go on to the other states. And the same is true of Hillary or Bernie. If, you know, if Hillary comes in on a squeaker, she'll say, I won, you know, and this is tough, you know, that, and I'm ready to fight all the way, and we're gonna go long, and we're gonna show the American people and the Democrats that you know, I am the most experienced person. I don't think there's going to be much capitulation, and we can contemplate our navels and study the percentages, and professors will be writing referee journal articles, you know, about that, but they're not read by anyone anyway, so it doesn't matter. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. You're a professor, aren't you? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I hear you. Well, I was only ever an instructor, so I wouldn't know what professors think. I wasn't included in any of those faculty meetings. Mark from Colfax, I think you'll be our last caller today for this hour. Mark, go ahead.
Hi. Well, I'm wondering, I think O'Malley's probably going to stick in the race for a while because he wants to speak at the convention and possibly become the vice president nominee. And then the next cycle, he's going to be ready to run for president for real.
Okay. Mark, interesting perspective. Professor, what do you think? O'Malley angling for the VP?
You know, hey, he has maybe you have a crystal ball and you saw that in there. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know. It's very rare for someone who runs for president to pick someone who was running against them in the caucuses or in the primaries to then become the vice presidential running mate. It has happened, but it's very rare because, you know, Hillary Clinton is from the Acela corridor, and O'Malley is from the Acela corridor, which is that train that runs up and down between Washington and Boston, you know, through New York. And the people who become presidential candidates from that corridor almost never get elected president. I doubt if Hillary Clinton got the nomination that she would want him on the ticket. I think she's going to want a Hispanic. I think she's going to want someone from the Midwest or the West in order to create excitement in those parts of the country. And O'Malley has got a problem with African Americans because, you know, he implemented those harsh, harsh policies in Baltimore that led to the broken windows policy and so on. And African Americans are not very supportive of him. They are a huge part of the Democratic Party's Southern primary voters, and he may become a cabinet member, you know, of some sort in a Clinton administration, maybe a Sanders administration. But who knows? You know, your caller may have a much better intuition than I do.
All right. Well, my intuition is that the clock is telling me that we're out of time, and that's the way it goes. And thank you so much.
Too bad.
Yeah. We could have done another hour. And for a while, it was looking like my 2 o'clock guest had canceled, and I was thinking about seeing if you could stick around.
I've got appointments in Des Moines, but okay. You know, it's always a great pleasure. You have a wonderful, wonderful show, program, and listeners.
Okay, thank you so much, Dr. Politics, for spending this hour with us. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Stephen Schmidt is a professor of political science at Iowa State University. Thanks so much to K.P. Whaley, who handled production duties for this. Also to Dave Potratz, who handled some engineering for me this afternoon. Another hour to go on the Kathleen Dunn Show, so stick around. We'll continue our political discussion with a closer look at the demographics of the Republican base. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.